You're listening to Show Me Your Mic, a show that interviews other podcasters about their workflows, gear, and thoughts on podcasting. Your host is Chris Enns, a podcaster who's hoping to learn more about the craft by talking to fellow broadcasters.
Yes, hello and welcome to Show Me Your Mic. This is episode 17, and I am pleased to be joined by Daniel Jalkut. Hello, Daniel. You're there. Hopefully.
Hello, Skype Chris. Up. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
Yes, it's great to have you. For folks who don't know Daniel, I'll say where I know you through, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
You're a developer, software developer, Apple developer. Red Sweater Software is your company. And you make a few different apps, and the most infamous, at least the one that I'm sort of familiar with, came to know you by, was Mars Edit. And you're a former software engineer at Apple. And the main reason why I would have you on a show just to chat with you, period, but the main reason for this show is that you also now have two podcasts, the Bit Splitting podcast, which is an interview show with folks in tech, folks like Guy English, Erica Hall, Brent Simmons. You're up to 5 episodes as of this recording anyways. And also Core Intuition, which is a weekly, it's now weekly, right? It hasn't always been weekly, right? Is that?
Yes, it has not always been weekly. And it's been weekly now for almost a year, or okay, maybe a year total. But we, you know, kind of cutting a little bit ahead to just talking shop, that was directly aligned with the moment we agreed to start taking sponsorships. So
interesting.
That was a helpful motivation. Yeah.
So that's up to 89 episodes as of this recording. And there was a break in there. I think you had I was looking at the list. I think it was almost a year break or 8 months or something, whatever it worked out to be.
It wasn't a break. That was just when the schedule shifted to once every 8 months for an 8 month period.
Right. It's all marketing. Yeah.
Yes, right.
We're not on a break. We're just on a... Yeah. What is that?
We're really stretching time, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know what the 8th. Yes, we
come out every 8 months. No, yeah. No sooner, no longer for that 8 month period. But yeah, your summary of my scope of what I do is pretty much covers it, I think. You know, apart from that, I also do some blogging on bitsplitting.org. Bitsplitting.org has kind of been my recent, in the past several months, push to extract myself a little bit from the Red Sweater Software site, because you know, Red Sweater Software is my personal, and you know, software company that I started, and it's just me. And for years, I've been sort of using it as a personal technology blog and a software company. And I just started to get kind of uncomfortable with that, because at some point, you know, it's like my rants against whatever Apple's doing, or, you know, anybody else, and strongly held opinions aren't really, I think, as appropriate for this kind of pseudo corporate presence. So yeah, bitsplitting.org is kind of like my, I can let it all my tech stuff hang out.
All the rage.
Yes, all the rage comes out.
Which I was going to say, with the podcast, you do your Twitter handle is Daniel Punkass. And I mean, I follow you on Twitter, and you know, you sort of read and you establish a voice for someone in your head for what they probably sound like based on what they write. And, you know, and then hearing your podcast, it was kind of like, he sounds way too nice a guy to be this. Not that, yeah. It makes it sound like you're like raging mad. No. And I'm being a bit facetious, but yeah, nice radio voice.
I know
voice.
It's a common reaction, and actually people also find it surprising that I basically look exactly the same as my Twitter avatar, and they expect some kind of a more provocative countenance, I guess. But the truth is that I do sort of use Twitter as a sass. You know, I can get my sass out there. It's not that I'm not a sassy person in real life, and that I'm not. And on this show, I'll be sassy with you if it gets there. But there. My thing with Twitter is always to have my goal. I often say this is my goal with Twitter is sort of annoying to some people, I'm sure, but it's kind of to have my perfect tweet is when 1 out of 100 people reading it kind of really gets it. And then it's not very fair to the other 99 people, but I like to think that the one person out of 100 who gets it is constantly in flux. So like 100 tweets later, you'll be the one that gets it, and you'll be like, "Oh yeah, that was it. That was it. That one was for me." But it tends to be a sort of like me begging the followers to put a little work into sometimes trying to appreciate the punk ass nuance of what I'm trying to say. But yeah, that's interesting though, that a lot of people have that reaction. And yeah, in particular, people who have heard me on Core Intuition and on Bit Splitting, they notice that I kind of have a different radio voice. So that, you know, that kind of relates actually to the topic at hand here. Maybe something else we can talk about is you know, and anybody who does do a podcast, I do believe we all go into a certain sort of performance mode. And in a way that even if it's just, for instance, I'm probably enunciating more clearly now than I would if I were talking to you at a bar or a cafe.
Yeah. Depending on how many drinks too, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm also using my, standard American dialect, English, so that all of our friends listening from places as far-flung as Slovenia can easily understand us.
Exactly. You're not throwing in some Canadian isms just to try to appease to the Canadian audience that I may or may not bring to the show.
Right. I would sooner try my hand at Slovenian than to attempt to pull off something as nuanced as Canadian dialect.
There you go. Nuanced Canadian dialect. I think that's that's a good name for a new podcast, maybe.
There you go.
Catalog that one. Right. But it's funny that there's a few different things to pick up on there. And I just the Twitter stuff I wanted to go back to, because I can identify certainly with that aspect of Twitter that I don't, this has nothing to do with what the show is about, but that's fine. It's my show. The sort of the ID or the id, I mean, sorry, of, I know, I think Merlin Mann refers to it that way, but kind of just, and he's even more like blunt and kind of, you have to figure out what's going on and less conversational than what you are, at least what I could see anyways. But it is kind of fun just to sort of mess with folks and either tweet random things or tweet something really that's, you know, that, like you said, only a couple folks might get, and that's fine if only a few folks get it and the rest can be confused. And, but jumping to podcasting, I guess the, presumably you don't try and do that so much with the podcasts, and the what's interesting in what you're saying about sort of separating from Red Sweater is the aspect of where some folks tend to use it as a marketing vehicle for their thing, so their product or service, and not that you don't hide the fact that you do Red Sweater and the software that you develop and things, but it is a separate entity. And what was, you sort of touched on it a bit, I guess, but what was sort of the reasoning behind having these different domains that you set up for Core Intuition, Bit Splitting, as opposed to just like, you know, on danieljockett.com or whatever as the host for your sites or podcast?
Well, in particular with Core Intuition, because it is a true partnership with Manton Reese, it would have been, it would not have occurred to me to do that. But with Bit Splitting, it's kind of funny, I guess. I started bitsplitting.org as I said, sort of like another technical, like, a place for me to just vent stuff and sort of have a technical identity. And I do also own jalkut.com, so I suppose I could have used that. But I think I was just sort of following in the sort of like model of this kind of like tech, quote unquote, punditry, like putting a brand on your blogging, I think it's useful. It's not only useful, but it's also makes it a little bit more fun. I think it would be kind of boring if everybody out there was just like, this is, you know, for example, the johngruber.com site wouldn't be as fun to visit as Daring Fireball. It could say John Gruber and have a little star symbol, and it just wouldn't be as fun. There's sort of like, there's something to this kind of, anytime you make a brand around something, even if it's just for your 100 readers or listeners, it becomes something sort of like independent of the talent, so to speak, and something that you can kind of gives you some freedom. I think another angle to it is it gives you some freedom to kind of promote it in a way that you might not be as comfortable being so blatantly self-promotional. Like, has everybody checked out the new danieljalkut.com? It's amazing, you know? And I just think that there's maybe a little bit of detachment from the product that helps you say, oh, yeah, this is, or there's a reason that it's not called Daniel Jalkut's blogging app. You know, it's like, that's just not as fun. I guess there's Mavis Beacon teaches typing, yeah, but
you could have been the Mavis Beacon of blogging.
Right.
I guess maybe that's Matt Mullenweg. I don't know. But
yeah,
no, it's funny. Actually, you say that because I have chrishens.com. That's my blog. And I'm not in any way taking what you said as a slap because I know it's a decision I went through. And I remember, and that's just blogging, which is my, if podcasting is my hobby, blogging is my, whatever's below a hobby, I guess. But, but yeah, it is, I can certainly identify just as soon as you said that with like promotion and like, I'm way less likely to say, I'll use a URL shortener way more because it's just, you know, hey, check out my post at my name dot blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just kind of feels a bit awkward. And then that's why, again, obviously podcasting at sskTN.com instead of through my site, it's easier to, it does separate you. And it allows, I think it also allows others to be join along with you, like you said, with, you know, Matt and on Core Intuition, obviously, but even further than that, it's easier to sort of incorporate other folks along the way as you do things. So, I'm just trying to decide which show to maybe touch on first, but let me just go with Core Intuition since that's what we were sort of talking about. The it's a tech show, indie development, focusing on Mac, iOS, Apple tech, and like you said, you co-host it with Matt and Reese. What I like about the show, and I don't have time to listen to every episode of every person I interview, unfortunately, but what I liked about the episodes I did find is that going into it, I thought, okay, it's going to be way over my head, and because I'm not an app developer, I'm a web developer, and I didn't think I'd find any mental hooks, I guess. But what I found about the show, and maybe over the course of the episodes, it changes. Obviously, I'm sure each episode is different as far as the topics, but it was easy enough for you guys. The way you guys talked about the stuff, it was heady knowledge and good discussion, but it wasn't so high level. Or low level, depending which way right. you look at it, that it I couldn't be entertained and also find it interesting and be curious what your guys' thoughts were on it. As someone who uses software but doesn't know how to write a lick of code to build software, I was interested in, and it was engaging, I guess. And so, in asking this, I guess it feels a bit like it's the obvious answer as well. It's just you guys and that's your personalities. But do you put a conscious effort into the level of discourse, because presumably you could go really deep into, you know, this bracket should go here and then this thing,
right?
You know, how do you decide sort of where to pull it back and that?
I think we do mostly subconsciously aim in that direction, but sometimes consciously. I think neither one of us wants to make Core Intuition into like the you know, the vocational school for coding. It's not intended to be instructive about the art of programming per se, although we touch on programming issues. It's the way we sort of like started it was just really, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I can't honestly remember what our goal was when we started, but it often started in the early days with just Manton and I kind of touching base on what we've been working on for the week. And so it would be kind of a natural outgrowth of that, like, oh yeah, well, since Apple shipped, who knows, since Apple shipped 10.5, you know, there's all these new APIs and it's giving me lots of ideas. And that's the kind of stuff that it is obviously more geeky than something that a total non-technophile would want to hear. But there's this whole class of kind of like I'm a fan of movies, and I might like to watch like a show where they talk about the making of a movie, even though I'm not cinematographer or a, you know, a film editor or any of these professions that are really deeply involved in it. So there's this whole class of like people who are like that about software. And they're like, I'd just like to listen to your show to get some sense of what goes into this process of making software. And so I think that that's sort of like, if we take a step back, sometimes that's our audience as we see it is not only programmers, but also people who are just kind of like trying to get a sneak peek into the mindset of indie developers, trying to grapple with all the stuff that goes with that, the technical work of making the software, the, you know, grappling with decisions that are out of our control, like what Apple decides for us, and just trying to like make a living at it. So I think what you experienced is good. It's good that you felt that it wasn't getting too technical. We basically feel that there are a ton of technical oriented podcasts like that. And there's a couple things. First of all, there are a ton of shows like that. Second of all, I don't think we are particularly well suited to be like educators in that sense. And finally, I think it's a lot harder to make that stuff conversationally interesting. So it's a lot harder to have like a show that seems entertaining while you're talking about, like you said, which bracket goes where. And yeah. It's like, it's just not as natural of a fit, in my opinion, for the audio conversation format. So,
yeah. And both, I should mention, maybe Matt and Reese is also a, he's an employee of a company, but he does run his own software company as well, right?
That's right.
I don't know him that well, so I don't want to put words in his CV, but
right.
Yeah. So he develops software as well, and that's what you do as well. And so there's a bit of covering all of that angle of grappling with, like you said, grappling with Apple, the ebb and flow of Apple's decisions and how that affects you and your software. And a bit of that, and you could, again, I'm not trying to put words in your guys' mouth, but I certainly, from afar, it feels a bit like, at some moment, it feels like Apple could just release a blogging software app because they'd see the future of that. I mean, I don't really think that's going to happen, but
right.
That's sort of the sense I get from a lot of developers is there's this, like, not to turn into an Apple discussion show, but the fear, I guess, that Apple's going to eat your lunch, so to speak, and there's lots of different examples of things, and the big one maybe like iTunes or whatever. But at any rate, that's, people can listen to your show to quarantine to hear a bit about that. But speaking of tech, I guess what is some of the tech, going back to podcasting here? What's some of the tech that you guys use to collaborate and say plan a show and things like that?
We are grudging users of Google Docs, and I say grudging because the damn thing just works, and it's really easy to put our thoughts together and then live at the time of the recording, even be, you know, group editing the same document. The grudging part is, you know, I don't know if you've used Google Docs at all, but every time I try to like copy and paste out of it, some nastiness happens. You know, we had this situation once where we finally went in, we're about to record the show, and then suddenly, oh, Google Docs is down. And that's a very unusual thing, to their credit, but it hit home at that moment. Like, oh, we kind of can't do our show right now because all the notes we had made for the week, you know, we sort of collect our notes there, were gone. And so we love Google Docs and we use it, but we're sort of always on the lookout for something different in that respect. I recently had the idea actually to use Apple's Reminders app, because you can invite collaborators on a Reminders list. Mm-hmm. And so we're playing with this idea of having a Reminders list for the topics, say, for the week. And then we could just pull up Reminders and it's right there, the shared collaborative list for the week. And that has the nice benefit too that I'm a big Siri user on my iPhone. So I like the fact that I could say while I'm walking down the street, and let's say I'm listening to your podcast and I'm walking down the street and you talk to somebody about an issue that's timely, and I say, oh, we should talk about that on my podcast. I just, you know, press Siri, you know, press the button for Siri and say, add, you know, new Apple TV to podcasting topics. And then it's there. So that's a kind of a cool trick, I think, that we might get more into. Apart from that, we're just kind of the standard, you know, like there's kind of like an equivalent to the LAMP stack for web development.
Yeah.
For podcasting, which is like Skype. We have a pretty typical setup. Almost everybody uses Skype, as you know. But we also use another very common component as part of the puzzle is Audio Hijack Pro on the Mac. And we use that to do our recordings of each side. And then some folks also use Call Recorder, but we haven't actually gotten into that need so much because we're a two-person show, so it's easy enough for each of us to just record our own side. And let's see, apart from that, I'm kind of going beyond what you asked about the tools for collaboration, but in the sense of like just all the tools for collaborating on the production of the show, we also use Manton currently does all the editing for Core Intuition. And I believe he is still using GarageBand for that, which might be an interesting topic for us to talk about in a little bit. But we host the show on a WordPress blog and use my own beloved MarsEdit to do the bulk of editing those show episode entries. What other kinds of tools do you use that are outside the scope of that? Is there something I'm missing? Trigger my memory here.
Let's just go into the gear then too, like the microphones that you're using too.
We actually just switched. I'm talking to you now on a Rode Podcaster, which is, as I've learned, it's become also a very typical piece of gear. And I think that's well warranted because it does seem to be very high quality for the cost, and it's nice that it's a USB cable, so it plugs right into my MacBook Pro.
That's funny that you mentioned Rode, because I just a little while ago I'd emailed them, because you know, we'll get into the sponsor discussion, but I mean obviously I'm hunting a bit for some sponsors for this show, and the obvious would be some podcasting gear, but
right,
the companies that everybody, you know, you're kind of like, I want a company that is quality and good to sponsor, obviously, because I want to recommend something that way. But if everybody keeps talking about it, you know, like the Rode Podcaster, just about everybody, either they see a Heil PR40.
They don't need to advertise.
Yeah, they would listen to the show and like, well, you already are. Why would we pay you? Right. So maybe I'll start censoring and just putting a please sponsor here.
let's talk more about that, because I think that would not be a good argument for them to withhold the advertising.
I'll make sure to send that audio to them. Anyway.
But we actually just got these Rode Podcasters in an effort to because we are so consistently recording with just the same other person on the show, it made a lot of sense to us to have a identical setup more or less. So Rode Podcasters plugged into the USB port of a Mac, recording with Audio Hijack Pro with all the same settings, all the same volume levels, etc. Just makes it that much easier for Manton than to pop the audio files into an editor and do the final mix. But before that, I was using and still have here, I'm actually listening with headphones through my other audio interface, which is a Motu 828 Firewire interface. And that's what I was using with a standard Shure SM58 mic for a long time, since the beginning of the show. So, you know, over 5 years now, recording with that trusty bit of utensil. That's about it. You know, I have a good set of Sony headphones that is valuable in the sense that anybody who's doing this, and especially if you're trying to record the other person's end, it's very important, or it can be very important to get good headphones that each side ideally should have headphones that are good enough so that the audio doesn't bleed out into the mic. This has been a problem sometimes on my own show editing, and because I have a particularly loud voice, I think I've sometimes caught my own voice on the guest's mic on their end.
Oh, right.
And it's because they're listening on these headphones maybe that aren't aren't as cupped, you know, they don't block the sound in as much. And so I think that's a good investment, good headphones. And apart from that, really, I think that's it. You know, like I said, there's some software, but it's gotten to the point now. And I think really, you know, not to butter up Rode podcasters' mics too much, but I think it's gotten to the point where it's pretty cool that you can say, buy this kind of great mic and this kind of great set of headphones for a total of maybe $300, and you can be, I think, doing business with the just about the, you know, the not the pros, but the high end amateur market, which I would count myself part of, you know.
Yeah, and for 90 some percent of your listeners, they won't even tell the difference, other than you sound way better than the, you know, the folks who are just shouting into their computer, laptop, speaker, or mic, or whatever.
Right.
For sure. You'd mentioned Manton does the editing in GarageBand, and I'm not sure if that's in lieu of the discussion I emailed you about, maybe, or if there's something with the way Manton does editing in. So you would send him your audio file, he has his audio file of his recording. Is that how you do it, or does he just record both ends and you send it as a backup kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't think he even records me. I just send him the audio file, and so far that's been good. We haven't had any major mishaps in that sense. You know, nobody running out of disk space. Although there's been some close calls, it's definitely become part of my pre-recording checklist to just take a quick peek at the Finder and see how much disk space I have. But yeah, I have a little script that takes my audio and just packs it up, copies it up to a web server, sends Manton an email, and then the rest is magic. And that's how I thought podcasts were made until I ventured out into making my own with bit splitting. And then I got a real taste for all the actual challenges of editing, and, you know, down to like the final pulling the trigger on the episode and hoping that the volume levels are right and all that stuff. There's a little bit more to it than you might guess. not that you might guess, Chris, because I know you are well familiar with it, but then folks might guess.
Yeah. Oh, I just guess though each time. I mean, I guess I understand, but I guess it's still. So does Manton do like the common industry term is like a double ender or whatever, where you like have some sort of audio signal to where you line up your audio and then at the beginning or the end of the recording? And then because what I found, and maybe I'll have to talk with Manton maybe sometime here, but what I found when I've tried some of those is, and I know Jason Snell does this for the incomparable, whichever language you're talking, and I always get just like a bit of drift, and it frustrates me more than the issue of, you know, someone occasionally talking over another person or whatever, that you would get with a normal Skype call where you just call both or record both sides of the conversation. Right. So,
I think for whatever, well, here's a couple things. In my limited now, you know, 5-6 episode experience of editing my own show, I have also experienced this phenomenon. I think the drift you're talking about is in a nutshell, like if I record 30 minutes and you record 30 minutes, somehow in the audio program, mine's like 30 minutes and 30 seconds and yours is 30 minutes. And somehow they just don't quite line up, even though
I know
it's like a very subtle time difference. And you have to go in and like cut and then shift upwards and stuff like that. That's what you're alluding to.
Yeah. Which is so odd to me I understand I'm not a complete dummy when it comes to computers, but at the same time, I feel like in those moments, I feel like how my dad might be like, I just push this thing and it should open. Like, it's ones and zeros. It should just record.
Yeah.
But anyways.
I don't really understand it either. I think it must have something to do with, I'm guessing it has something to do with differing sample rates and then the way that the conversion of that audio maybe just is very subtly different in the timing. It hasn't been such an issue with Core Intuition and with Manton precisely because it's such an edited show.
Oh, okay.
So the fact is that we go for an off-the-cuff sound, but it's not unusual for there to be 40 minutes of recording for a 30-minute show. And that, you know, we're not cutting out a ton of stuff, but it does mean that each sort of block of speaking is liable to have been sliced and diced a little bit. So he will just kind of tighten it up a little bit. So to answer the question, it would be frustrating if we were trying to just slap the audio files together and, you know, make sure there's no glaring omission and then ship it. But because he's going through and listening to the whole show and sort of trying to tighten it up anyway, it's not a big deal. If there was some time drift, then it would just be.
Yeah.
And I going back to like our decision to standardize on the same mic, I think that would very likely eliminate whatever that time drift problem is. I'm guessing that, you know, he and I each recording on the same brand of mic, you know, in the same audio software with the same settings means that we're going to get a very consistent result. One separate problem from that, however, we ran into on one episode was a Skype latency. So we ran into a situation where it was just like, it sounded like, well, we were just a little slow answering each other because we weren't getting the message in time.
Yeah.
And that's something that, again, he was able to fix up in editing, but not something that could really cope with if it were a live straight to tape type of thing.
Yeah. And that's another interesting, you know, you alluded to sort of the standard stack of software and tools that podcasters use, but the two camps of live to tape versus edit and refine, I guess. And
yep.
And I don't know how you'd begin to do some sort of like comparison of the success of one style versus the other, because there's so many other variables, obviously. And and I tend to be in the out of laziness than anything else of the just live tape thing, unless there's major gaffes. But I know that, you know, in another show that I edit, a Non-Breaking Space show, then it's a little bit higher level discourse, and there is times where discussion goes off the rails a bit, and or there's right. Skype issues with when they have multiple guests and things like that. And then I do go back and edit before it's just pumped out. But
I think it's an aesthetic question for the producer of the show. So I have no problem with a show that its mission from the outset is to more or less do a live recording and publish that, you know, on the feed and say, here you go, folks, here's the show. It has some gaffes in it. It has our, you know, occasional hems and haws about what we're going to talk about. And that's just part of the conversational nature of the show. In Core Intuition's case, it's been an aesthetic choice from the beginning not to have that. And it sort of goes in line also with, and this is more Manton's, this has been more of Manton's push from the beginning, but I value it, even though it wasn't sort of my priority, but it's been of utmost interest to him from the beginning to have the show be relatively concise. And at his sort of like, inspired by his desire for that, we aim for a 30-minute show. And when you're trying to produce something of quality that has information in it, has opinions in it, has thought-provoking ideas in it, then, and also limiting yourself to 30 minutes, then you don't want to waste any of that time with junk about, you know, junk that's not relevant to the show. So if you're going to go for that aesthetic of conciseness, then I think it makes a lot more sense to also edit the show for value in the quality of the content.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I'll have to touch base with him and have him on sometime, because I'm curious. Well, just even from your perspective, you know, you say something and then he edits out part of it, let's say. And I don't imagine it's to the point where he's changing things, obviously, that you're saying or anything like that. Just maybe you go on a tangent and then he decides in editing. It's not worth
it. It has been known to happen, yes.
And obviously, after 80-odd episodes, you're familiar enough with each other, and beyond podcasting, you're familiar with each other. And so it's not that it's taken personally, I don't imagine at this point. That's do you listen to your own podcasts back?
I listen to almost every episode. A lot of people think that's really weird, but it's sort of a quality control thing for me. And it's also, to be honest, I actually enjoy listening to the show, and I will find myself like laughing at our own like jokes, even if they're maybe not very good. But you know, I have a luxury of sorts in that I find myself with, compared to many people, I find myself with plenty of time to listen to podcasts, in part because I'm a runner. So the amount I run means I have lots of time I'd like to fill up with entertaining content. And so I usually do find it the opportunity to listen to my own shows. And sometimes I am kind of like, wait a minute, I thought I said something here that I had a really good thing to say there. And in general, Manton is very generous in his editing of me and allows me to go off on tangents. But sometimes I have been like, wait, I was just getting to the, usually makes me sound, at least as good, if not better than I did at the live recording. So I can't complain.
Yeah. More often than not, you're coming out better than you were then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have that struggle of listening to my own podcast I struggle with listening to my own podcast because I still haven't, after however many hundreds of episodes I've put out over the various shows, still struggle with just listening to my own voice. But when I do listen, just like you said, it's good, I think, a good practice to do, even if you don't do it all the time. But I find myself thinking like, okay, you know, like in this conversation, listening to it back later, I'll be thinking the same point I want to say, you know, in response to you, and then I'll like hear myself saying a variation on that point on the show or whatever, and just kind of like mentally, and plus doing the time shifting kind of thing that I do here, where we have this conversation now, but it's not actually released for a couple of weeks in this case, and then it's sort of like revisiting this conversation, and I shouldn't have total recall of it, but I kind of do, and yeah,
right,
messes
right
with your brain.
Yeah, well, to folks out there who maybe are thinking of doing their own show, or they're just getting used to doing the podcasting, and you too, Chris, so you say you're not quite comfortable with the sound of your own voice, I would say that it is something that happens. Something flips over one day where it's like, oh, I'm just so used to hearing that voice, and the sort of like cliche, loves the sound of his own voice. It kind of happens. It's like, okay, well, I'm comfortable enough with that voice, and I hear the things in my voice that I know are kind of unique and kind of funny, and maybe I don't think that they're my best quality, say, but after hearing it enough, you just kind of come to terms with it. It's kind of like looking at yourself in the mirror. I mean, if you had audio is kind of like this, I think, for a lot of people. It's like a mirror for your voice that you very rarely discover in a normal life, right? Like this is why people when I was younger, like the first major introduction to this phenomenon was like setting the voicemail or the answering machine message on your phone.
Right.
It's like, oh, I sound that way? And it's kind of funny because all of us have access to mirrors to see visually what we look like. And sound mirrors, i.e. tape recorders, are just not, people don't use them as much. And I think that if we heard our own voices as much as we saw our own face, you know, obviously some people are still not comfortable with the way they look either, but most of us, I think, we kind of see ourselves, and as long as we look roughly the same as we have the last however many years, we think we're kind of in good shape. And I think people will feel that way if they indulge themselves to listen to themselves on tape enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is me being comfortable with my voice, the fact that I'm actually going to put this out somewhere, whereas I know a few years ago it was kind of like I'd record episodes just like me talking or whatever and then listen to it and be like trash and then get to the point where now it doesn't bother me, but if I come home and my wife is listening or something, then I'll just like go to the basement or make her turn it off, because that, I think, actually that's maybe more the thing, is listening to it in the company of other people is where it gets kind of weird. And okay, we're all sitting here, not that I sit around with my friends listening to my podcast that often,
right,
but yeah, like we're sitting here listening to me talk about something and yeah, just something weird switches
that,
in your brain.
I have to admit that would be awkward. And there have been times when I've like accidentally popped on Core Intuition or something in the car and left my wife there and I'm like, quick, turn it off. It's a different scenario for sure.
Yeah. Something that we're going to touch on, you talked about performance voice and we sort of did that at the beginning, but one question from the chat room that I just wanted to ask you about, what plugins are you using within WordPress for managing the podcast, or are you doing anything special there, or just embedding
that? On the Core Intuition show, we are not using a plugin. It's pretty low tech there because we've been running that podcast now for so many years. I doubt there were any.
Yeah.
Or if so, not many plugins at the time. So we just have a kind of a bifurcated system on Core Intuition where the blog posts are there to sort of represent the episodes, but the podcast feed itself is actually hand edited by Manton.
Right.
So that's not ideal. There are many problems with this situation. Not the least of which is the work that Manton has to do to manually update that. But there's other stuff like the feed is not as rich with iTunes specific metadata as it might be. If he either went to that much more work, or if there was an automated system for making it, you know, there's all this stuff you can have in an iTunes feed that it's just helpful for iTunes, and I guess for other podcasting apps that pay attention to it. And so it's not ideal. And there's some other little things I can't remember now. There's reasons why we want to switch that over to using some kind of plugin, or at least using some kind of automation. So when I started the Bit Splitting podcast, I looked carefully at a few different plugin options, and I tried one. Name is not coming to mind, and that's probably good because it's not a favorable review. I tried one that was very complicated. Let's put it that way.
Right.
I actually just thought of the name, so I guess I'll say it. It was called Blueberry or something. It's like blueberry without the E. And it was impressive. I have to hand it to them. It was impressive, the scope of what they are tackling. However, I found that it was just this kind of monstrous thing that I ended up finding after putting a lot of faith in it and thinking, oh, this is going to be great. Yes, it's monstrous. Yes, it's complicated, but I'm going to get this all set up and everything's just going to work right. And then there was something subtle about it that didn't work the way I thought it should. And I realized I had to either just suck it up and go with that, or I had to back slowly away from the plugin. And I did that sort of uncertain at that point whether I would use a plugin or not. But then, as luck would have it, I ran into this other plugin, which I have to imagine was named and developed by somebody who had tried to use one of the other plugins and also backed slowly away because it was called the Seriously Simple Podcasting plugin. And I got this plugin. It turned out, you ever install a WordPress plugin or something and you're like, oh, okay, well, this was obviously developed 3 years ago and it's abandoned. So I probably will never be updated. Yeah. But this case, I just assumed that was the scenario. And then I like looked back at the website and it was like a week after I had installed it, it was like 8 revisions later. The guy was just hammering away at it. And like I had evidently installed it like midway in its infancy. So I think it's actually being actively developed and
On the WordPress plugin site anyways, its last update was May 11th. So that's
right.
A couple weeks ago, which relative for most WordPress plugins is pretty good actually.
Yeah. So I have to say I ran into a few glitches while I was working with it, and I sort of like manually fixed them in my copy and made a note to like go back and see if the updates fix it. But I have to assume there are some growing pains that may even already be worked out now. But I did find the Seriously Simple aspect of it to be more or less true. It's fancy enough that it does things like provide a dedicated like UI in the admin panel of WordPress for podcasts. It uses the notion that podcasts are a different post type, which has some downsides for me with Mars Edit, because currently Mars Edit can't notice and edit non-post types. So it's kind of actually a good exercise for me to get a taste for frustration that folks might be running into with Mars Edit. But apart from that, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty fancy for being as seriously simple as it is.
Yeah, it looks nice. I mean, the proof, I guess, is often in the actual, to me anyways, with podcasting plugins, is the site itself, how well it looks. And it's interesting hearing from a programmer like yourself who who can go in and tweak things. And if I go in and tweak things, then it ends up usually breaking things worse. And so, but just that the angle that you would take in searching things out like that is interesting to me, because I actually ended up, I do use the PowerPress plugin, which is what Blueberry was. And it, depending on when you looked at it, it was, I think, version 3 and now version 4, and there was quite a few changes. But what PowerPress allows for me, which isn't in the, wouldn't be something in the simple one, I would hope, because that's, this isn't simple, is having multiple shows managed by category. So category feeds become, you can have iTunes podcast settings per category, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I think this one does do that. It's maybe they are betraying their title a little bit here, but I saw something about this. It's like a series. That's what they call it. Yeah. They do use something like that with a special category for a series of shows. I'm not sure if it's like a whole if it's intended to be a whole different show or not, but
right. Yeah.
It's worth taking a look. It sounds like you are, you know, well settled with the Blueberry plugin and whatever it is I ran into, maybe you just didn't run into.
Off on it for a long time too, because I have, like I've said, I used to have, which is a discussion in another time, but having, you know, shows on their own websites and then kind of brought them all together at ssktn.com and needed to figure out, okay, you know, the hack that I am with WordPress, how am I going to do this? And, you know, because I'm not Dan Benjamin with, you know, custom coding my own CMS to host multiple shows and all that kind of stuff. And so prior to that, I was using, I can't remember what plugin it was, but it was something similar to what at first glance, anyways, this seriously simple podcasting plugin looks like, where it's just put in, actually it was even more simple than that because it wasn't custom post types. It was just added some of the metadata so that it would make an iTunes friendly feed and just really simple that way. But yeah, with this podcast sort of network stuff, then I needed to do something a little complicated. But and I held off doing using Blueberry for a while and tried a bunch of other ones, and then eventually did sort of took the plunge with it, kind of like what you said. Just
ate and it. Once you get it working, and as long as it's not like a security threat or something, then keep working with it. You know, keep using whatever's working for you to get your mind off of that technical junk and back onto the actual process of making the shows.
Yeah, that's the, and maybe we can jump into the sponsor discussion, because that is such the ebb and flow, I guess, of podcasting, where ultimately what you want to do is this. What you and I are doing right now is having a conversation or an interview or whatever discussion, and then putting that audio out and doing a bit of marketing around it. And that's really what we all hopefully sort of get into this for. And some of the fun is the gear and the microphones and a bit of, if you're a web nerd like me, then playing with the CMS a bit. But if you end up sort of going down that rabbit hole too far, then you don't actually put out any podcasts,
right?
Because you're tweaking your plugins and things like that. You're kind of defeating the purpose of it all, I guess. But jumping to sponsor discussion. Before we do that, I wanted to talk a bit about, just for a few minutes, on your developing your voice was something that you had referenced earlier. And the fact that you talk differently, you know, on a podcast than you would in real life, and which touches on, I guess, too, learning to appreciate your own voice and the nuances that you bring to the microphone table, so to speak. How did you develop your voice for your own show after having done, you know, a discussion show with a friend like you do with Manton can be a little easier because you're not waiting, you're not having to always think so like what I'm failing at right now. Think through your questions properly and sort of process while you're listening to the person, and then also be thinking about where you want to take the overall discussion and all those kind of angles to it. It is a different kind of voice you need to use probably as a host as opposed to a co-host. And so how did you develop your voice around that?
I don't think I did it consciously. I think that there is... to some extent, and I don't want to sound like I'm like bragging about my voice here, but to some extent I have been aware of needs of enunciation. And for example, I just have like this old memory of being like maybe 10 years old and finding this book at the library that was about singing. And I have musical interests. I've always kind of like been kind of interested in singing and playing musical instruments. And I just remember one of the exercises in that singing book was like, it was like, go overboard with the like pronunciation of words. So it'd be like, you know, this land is your land, you know, and you can kind of go, you can easily go overboard with that. But I think having some awareness that something like that could be useful, was helpful just to kind of know, that there's some reason to do it other than talking like this, you know, you know, like if you want to start a podcast and you just want to talk like this and maybe you're going to have problems. And I think that was just, and I don't talk like that in real life either. bottom line is probably actually if we were talking in a pub or a cafe, I would be talking more or less like this, but I'm sure there would be subtle differences. I also went to music school, so I have a little bit of appreciation for the idea that, that they're like, I remember sometimes back to tricks that, were taught to us in a chorus where, you know, I can't think of a specific example, but there would often be like times where to make the enunciation of what a chorus is singing sound right, you would actually ask the chorus to sing a completely perverted version of the word. Like, like, I don't know, this is not the right example probably, but say, for example, we're all singing America. You might say like, they might ask you to everybody say Humerica, you know, with an H at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's just to give a kind of like a rough edge to the word. I guess I'm just a little bit fascinated by that. And like I said, I'm not saying I have that nailed or that that's my expertise, but there's some awareness of that as an issue. So I probably bring a little bit of that subconsciously to the way that I speak. The other thing is just to the extent that I have gotten better at broadcasting my voice on a podcast, it is just the practice of doing it so many times, right? Mm-hmm. You just kind of get more comfortable with it. And I remember back on my first, I think I started the show with Manton after I had been a guest on a couple shows, like on, there's a podcasting, Mac-based podcasting network called iDeveloper. Guy named Scotty in England does this this great developer-oriented series of podcasts. And I remember being on his shows. I was lucky enough to be on an episode of Mac Break Weekly with Leo Laporte, I think before I ever started my own shows. And I remember being very nervous and really not, that's part of it, having that comfort level with launching into just kind of knowing you can launch into talking and you might ramble on like I'm doing here, but in the end you might just, you know, you're going to be okay. You're going to be able to say something that comes to mind and it's not going to be too embarrassing or too terrible what comes out of your mouth. And that goes a long way, I think, towards having a comfortable quote unquote radio voice.
Yeah. And I think that's good advice for someone like just even if when you're starting out podcasting to just think about, and it goes back to listening to your own voice a bit and hearing yourself and getting used to that and figuring out the words that you say well and some that you mumble over. And I'm sure if my wife happens to listen to this, she'll be nodding in agreement and saying, see, I told you, but,
You seem to always mumble, Chris, when you say you were right.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
and having a good critic like, I poke fun, obviously, but having someone like your spouse or a friend or whatever that you can trust to give you honest feedback on the show, because often in the world of Twitter and et cetera, you'll get, hey, good job, great, sound great, you know, from friends and colleagues and peers and stuff. And they may or may not be able to speak completely honestly and say, you know, this part of it you kind of struggle with, and so why don't you work on that or whatever? Because it's tough to give that kind of feedback. But
yeah,
I think that's a great point, and just developing your own voice and figuring out what you might sound like, because it is a bit of a, it's not that it's completely different. It's not like acting on the stage by any means, or doing anything like that in the theater. but there is a performance aspect to it that you're doing, I think. And
I think that the degree to which you treat it like a performance can increase over time. I think it would be a good goal for anybody just starting out to say, hey, I'm going to try to speak as clearly as I can. Try not to talk over the other people. Try to get my thoughts out as concisely as I can. And then maybe your long-term goal is to be this kind of like, improvisational genius like Merlin Mann, who pops out with like, you never know when the guitar is going to pop up and like he's performing something. And I really admire Merlin's ability to, he's very quick with his thoughts, and he's also very, you know, I would say, you know, sometimes he can go on a tangent, but he's also very thoughtful and quick with his thoughts. And, you know, I don't know if you listened to the Roderick on the Line show, or if you've heard that. It's Merlin and his friend John Roderick, it's kind of fun to listen sometimes. And like Merlin will just be like bang, 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 bang. And then like 30 seconds later, John will get like this like joke that was just done that it's Merlin is like I think he is kind of like made for podcast performance in a way. And not all of us are going to be like that, but you don't have to be like that to start. You can start wherever you're comfortable, and maybe if that's one of your goals, maybe try to move toward that. But
yeah, actually, and a little teaser for anybody who's listening, hopefully you're listening. Well, you are listening.
For anybody who happens to be listening.
That's one of those radio things. I don't know where that comes from. But anyways, I actually have booked Merlin for in June here to come on and talk about that idea of the podcasting. And like, but it is that, like, I can just, it's both the most terrifying interview coming up, but also the easiest, because you can sort of serve him up a question and then you're done. You know, like he could go for half an hour and you're done and great, and you've got a great show, and that's a testament to his ability way more than anything that I will be doing. But at the same time, it's this nervousness of like, I have no idea where we're going to go or how it's going to go.
Well, that is a good point, and I've learned this in my brief career so far doing the interview show with Bit Splitting, is you have to be prepared to jump around in your style of interviewing and how you manage the guest. If you have a shifting guest every week, or my show's every 2 weeks. And that's actually a good point though, because somebody like Merlin, somebody who you know is capable of running with a question. For example, I interviewed John Siracusa, and it was a little comforting to me to know that John Siracusa knows how to do a podcast. And that's kind of a nice advantage you have here on this show, right? You're only interviewing people who have, by definition, been on a podcast before.
Yeah. And it's been interesting because I have done another show, Welcome to the Internet, it's called, where I emailed you and, you know, said, can I talk to you just about your programming and stuff like that? And then presuming you didn't have a podcast, let's say, but and you're kind of like, you don't know what you're going to get, because they're this brilliant programmer, let's say, or brilliant whatever Twitter person or whatever, but maybe they hate speaking and don't get, there's no give and take. And yeah, I've completely had to adjust my style, and I'm sure if I go back and listen to episode one of this show, you know, just recognizing as I do this that people know how to talk and it's okay, and they're comfortable with a bit of dead air because they know how it works with Skype and, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And I was going to commend you on, it's funny you bring up John Siracusa. That was in my notes of, you know, episode four, having John Siracusa on, which is, I know you guys know each other and stuff, and not because he's a celebrity in the tech world, but more so just because of the wealth of knowledge to have an interview with him on, where there's just so much stuff you could, you could touch to, which I guess is kind of like with Merlin, like you said, you know that he's going to bring knowledge, and just kind of like, okay, where do we go with this vastness of of your brain? Do you have, I hate putting you on the spot like this. I can edit this out, I guess, too, but do you have a few minutes? I know we're at an hour here, but we didn't even get to the sponsor stuff that I was curious to pick up.
No, I have time. Yeah, let's keep it going if it's not too long for you.
No, yeah, you're a programmer and own your own business too. So you got all day, right?
That's right. Yeah. And I got nothing to do.
you don't do it.
I'm a professional podcaster with a hobby in programming.
Right. Exactly. Yes. So sponsors, which is always the great conundrum for a lot of, well, bloggers, podcasters, I think it's all very similar. But so what I've noticed, and I'm just going to speak to what I've noticed with your shows, and then you can, we'll go from there. But you use a model that's basically your current sponsor is on the sidebar, the main site is, you know, this, and then that episode that happens to be with that show or with that sponsor is obviously, you know, at the top of the page. And within the episode notes, you have, you know, this thanks to Screens for sponsoring this show. But then those, that main site sponsor or the current sponsor will change obviously with each episode or every few episodes. That's the true for both podcasts, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
I'm simplifying it a bit, but.
Yeah. And so the basic format of the sponsorship, I heavily cribbed from John Gruber's The Talk Show on Mule Radio Network. And that was on my mind when we decided to start taking sponsorships, in part because I had just sponsored John's show with Mars Edit. And I don't usually sponsor shows, but it was right when John had started off on it was restarting the show on Mule, and I was just in the mood to be supportive of him, you know, keeping the show going. He was kind of taking some flack from people who were maybe really loyal to 5x5. I love lots of shows on 5x5, but I didn't think that John needed necessarily to, you know, stay on that network. So I sponsored the show, and he's like, okay, send me this graphic, send me a blurb, send me something about what you want me to read on the show. And then when I talking to Manton, I thought, well, I don't really know how to do this. So why don't we just, when in doubt, why don't we just do it the way John Gruber does it? And, I think he has actually since changed that, his strategy a little bit, and that he asks for, like, we still continue to ask for a literal blurb to read. I think he maybe just asks for talking points now.
Yeah.
I think you can do it either way. I sort of leave it open now to sponsors. Sometimes I say you can either give us a blurb or give us talking points. I actually just, getting down to the technical nitty gritty a little bit of the sidebar stuff you were mentioning. This is actually maybe a good tip for other folks who are using WordPress. You know, I know you are one. But I discovered this little plugin called Widget Logic. Have you heard of this?
No.
It solved a problem for me that, maybe the simplicity of my podcasting plugin didn't address, which is I wanted to have a sponsorship graphic in the sidebar. And I wanted to credit the current sponsor on a site-wide basis, but I didn't want, for example, I didn't want somebody who had just, often I'll invoice the sponsor and then I'll say, this is the show that you sponsored, and maybe it's already the next week by then and the new sponsor's up there. I didn't want that episode to show the new sponsor, especially when maybe this person who had just paid for this is going to visit the episode finally and they say, hey, wait a minute, why does it show this new sponsor? So I adopted a strategy where the any page on the site that is not the specific episode page will have the current sponsor. And if you go into any specific episode, it will always show in the sidebar the specific episode sponsor.
Oh, yeah. I see now. Yeah.
So this was a compromise. I think it works well. The current sponsor always gets slightly more exposure than old sponsors, but the old sponsors still kind of permanently lay claim to the episode entry. And I did that with this Widget Logic plugin, which is kind of cool. It lets you, for folks who use WordPress, that widgets are the little kind of like a formalized way of like making those sidebar entries on a blog. And Widget Logic lets you add an extra little line of PHP logic code that determines whether the little sidebar panel appears or not. So I actually have two widgets. One of them is current sponsor. One of them is episode sponsor. And whether or not either one shows is mutually exclusive based on that kind of logic. Like, is this a single episode entry that has its own sponsor? Then show that. Otherwise, show the site-wide current sponsor.
Oh, interesting. Gotcha. Yeah, I hadn't paid attention that closely. Obviously, when I was looking and flipping back and forth, that it actually did change on sub episode or an episode pages as opposed to the site-wide page.
Yeah, and that widget, that widget stuff is kind of interesting, if I do say so myself. it's when I did the sponsorship stuff, I decided to use WordPress custom fields to put in things like the sponsorship link, the image, and the blurb into the content of the episode itself. So the way that sidebar thing works, it's able to look up from the the episode itself the pertinent data. So what that means is that from MarsEdit now, I can add a custom field. When I'm editing the episode in MarsEdit, I just put the image link and the blurb and the URL, and that will automatically change the sidebar on the site. So that's kind of a cool little trick.
Yeah, interesting. I'm just trying to think of the plugin that I'm using that is similar. So if somebody is slightly less programmatically inclined, which what you're describing isn't all that complicated, but I know some people, you hear PHP and just kind
of course, yeah,
throw up their hands and smash their computer. Well, and some programmers hear PHP and do it. But a plugin that I use, where is it now? Which one? There is either Woo Sidebars is one. So if you wanted to have it similar to what Daniel's doing, where you wanted to only show these, have a widget area only on these certain pages, these archives, or these certain sections of post types or certain areas, that's one option is Woo Sidebars. The other one that's interesting is WP Category Post List Widget. So long name. And what that allows you to do is even more sort of, I'm mixing up the two. But the category post list widget is what allows me to, on a certain show page, have only recent episodes from this show listed as, you know, recent episodes, et cetera. And so similarly, you could do that with have other stuff appear as well. But Woo Sidebars is the one that allows you sort of say only on these pages, and you can check off specific pages or a category or whatever, then create a widget for that show, it would be a lot more work than what you're describing to do it per episode. Because you'd have to go in and make a new widget area each time you make a new show or a new episode, sorry. But for somebody who's not familiar with plugging code in, that would be another way to get around that. But that's an interesting idea that I hadn't, I'm sure a lot of people run into when they first start putting ads or sponsorship graphics and things on their site, is all of a sudden that thing appears but you want this new sponsor featured and it kind of gets messy. So.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like, as a programmer, it is always often about how do I make this as streamlined as possible for me to not screw it up. And that's, the way that logic works right now in the sidebar is the current sponsor is always determined by literally asking WordPress's database for the most recent post that has a sponsor attached to it. That makes it brain dead for me, so that if I ever publish something, there's no chance of me forgetting to credit the current sponsor. And that's what's important to me, is I would screw that up if I left it to my own attention. So,
well, because there is a lot of, and anybody who's published a podcast knows this, there's so many things you're doing, you know, never mind editing the audio and recording the show, but then just the show notes that you're doing and pasting that in. And I often copy and paste the previous show to, you know, use that as a template, but then half the time you forget to change, Ryan Ireland's name to Daniel Chalcutt, because that was the first episode.
And then everybody gets mad.
Yeah, that's when the punk ass rage starts. No,
that's right.
But any advice, I guess, for folks who are looking to start out on the road of getting a sponsor? And I think we don't have to cover necessarily like listener numbers and dollars and those kinds of things, but more so just in approaching, I'm assuming you're doing this yourself, or maybe you have some help with finding sponsors, but how you've approached who you bring. You mentioned, I joked about Road Podcaster, having them come on, and you had sort of some thoughts maybe there as well. So what advice do you give to me?
First of all, we have always up to this point booked our own sponsors, and we have been lucky to have, you know, at first we were very tentative about it, and I have to credit Marco Arment of formerly of Instapaper for actually sponsoring he was our very first sponsor. It was kind of easy because he was already listening to the show. He's a fan of the show, and he happened to, you know, have a company that had some advertising budget. So he sort of like said, "Well, I'd love to sponsor the show." And we're like, "Oh, great, we got our first sponsor." And then we're like, "We got to find more." And then we're, of course, worrying about all the things you worry about, like, what if I never find another sponsor? And then it'll be sad because it'll be this show that had one sponsor. And then every other show after was sponsored by Mars Edit. <It's> like, right. But we were lucky to get, you know, a few of our kind of loyal listeners did happen to run their own companies, and we're like, "Oh, we'd love to sponsor you." But more or less for a while, it was just like one sponsorship, you know, we'll take one episode, and that's fine. But that leaves a lot of room for doubt, like what's going to happen when we run out of sponsors. So just to kind of go backwards a little bit to what you're saying, like, how do you choose which people to be your sponsor? You know, to be honest, a lot of it is anybody who will sponsor the show, provided that they have a product that's not offensive to you in some way.
Yeah.
You know, and
maybe more so the target demographic, which, I mean, you could argue, obviously, this show would be similar, where you're preaching to or speaking to programmers who are either selling or work for a company that sells some sort of product, likely software. Right. And so there is a built-in desire to get that thing in front of it. Whereas, you know, sometimes an interview show or whatever, your audience might be just folks who are curious about podcasting, let's say, but don't actually have any money to podcast or have products related to podcasting.
Right.
And so,
right.
But anyways.
Yeah. So, I mean, the bottom line from the beginning has been, we will only take a sponsor whose product we can't go as far to say, like, only products we use, because that hasn't been strictly true. But products that we respect and that we can honestly say this will be useful to somebody, you know? So that's like kind of the standard for us is this a legitimate, bona fide, non-scammy product that is being developed by diligent people who want to help other people while making money? And that's like, okay, Rode Podcaster. Perfect example, because it's a real product. You could even, Chris, be using another brand of mic and say, with all good faith, the Rode Podcaster is a good mic. It is a good option for people who want to start a podcast. And that's a perfect example of a type of product that you can sort of help spread the word about it with in good conscience. And I think that's important for anybody who's thinking of taking a sponsor. You have to be able to do it in good conscience. And, you know, what that means is, if you happen to be doing like a podcast that's all about, you know, say religious purity or something, then you're not going to take sponsorships from some, you know, you're not going to take sponsorship from, let's say you have a theistic podcast. You're not going to take sponsorships from Richard Dawkins or something, right? Yeah. You're not going to do it. So there's got to be some like appropriateness for the show that you're doing, the audience that you have, and do you think this is something that will help a good number of them? So we were very lucky to actually get a repeat sponsor in Crashlytics, who is very, very narrowly focused at iOS developers, and provide a service that many of our iOS development listeners have appreciated. So that's worked out great. And it took the pressure off having to scramble quite as much to get sponsors when we had this like repeat sponsor. Apart from that, yeah, we have been extremely lucky in that we have booked our sponsorships consistently, you know, after a kind of growing pains at the beginning where we had to kind of hustle a little bit to get to get the sponsors. At some point, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think, because people see who else is sponsoring your show and they're like, oh, maybe we should sponsor that too.
Yeah.
With bit splitting, I have also booked my own sponsors, and that's fine, but I have to be honest with you, it's not my favorite thing to do. So I love having the sponsors, and I love the fact that they pay me, and I love that I get good quality sponsors, but the actual, you know, emailing people and making sure it's all lined up and all that is not my favorite thing. So I have been toying with the idea of outsourcing that to a guy named Lex Friedman, who is a co-host of the Unprofessional podcast, if you've heard that.
Yeah.
And he has started a new kind of micro, he calls it an advertising network, but what it means is he takes on the work of getting in touch with sponsors who might want to put an ad on your show, and arranges the rate and agrees with the sponsors to get all the necessary materials to you and takes a cut. And I've just in the early days of talking with him, I haven't gotten to the point where we've actually done a sponsorship. But I'm hopeful that with bit splitting, at least, I will be able to use his service. It's called podlexing.com if anybody's interested. And
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was just Googling, because I'd been talking with him about coming on the show.
Yeah.
You keep bringing up future guests, so that's another, which actually reminds me, I need to return an email to him, because just set that up. But when you were talking, I was thinking, oh yeah, that's what the thing he's talked about to doing as well. And I should mention that to Daniel. And then your show is listed on his page. So I don't know if there's.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. With my permission.
Yeah. Okay.
we've agreed. So the way he works with this is, at least the way we agreed to it, is that it would be a non-exclusive arrangement. So, you know, if I'm walking down the street tomorrow and somebody says, hey, I run Apple's advertising, we want to sponsor 200 episodes of bit splitting. And I can make that agreement. And it's not I agreed with Lex to book a certain number of episodes for me, and we'll see how that goes. And I think something that it's kind of like, not all of us are podcasters, not all of us are programmers, not all of us are WordPress, administrators. And you got to find like the set of things you can do, and then find a way to fill the gap of the thing you can't do. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, if you're not a programmer, you got to get a plugin that does the trick for you.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I've done a pretty decent job at it. I can be professional in my dealings with advertisers, but I am not a hustler like that. I'm not like, I don't want to deal with that if I can avoid it. You know, I like doing the work and getting paid for it. I like hustling in some sense. Like I like, getting more people to download and buy my software and stuff like that. But, mostly I just like being able to do something that make something and get paid for it. And to the extent that somebody like Lex could smooth that out for a bunch of us, I think he would be doing a service that he deserves to get paid for as well.
Yeah. And it's funny, because just in thinking about it, I think I'm similar to you in that when I think about doing what he's doing, that just makes me kind of like, not, it doesn't make me sick. I'm not like, it's not that level of stuff, but it is one of those things where like, man, I can't even imagine managing all that stuff, like just the scheduling and the pitching, like you're saying, the hustling and stuff and that he's doing. And I mean, I guess I'll talk to him in a future episode here and we'll pick his brain on that kind of stuff. But yeah, just that is, it's such a great idea of taking this avenue, this little thing, this part of one culture on the web that some people love and some people hate or aren't good at, and building a business around it, or a micro business or whatever it may end up being. So,
yeah. And there's a lot of little, I think we were talking about this before the show, but there's a lot more to podcasting than a lot of people would guess. There's a lot of little things like you got to figure out, you got to figure out which mic to buy. You got to figure out which headphones to use. You got to figure out which software to use. You got to figure out whether you record the guest or the guest records themselves. And then you add advertising, sponsorship, then you got to figure out how to get the sponsors. You got to figure out what format you're going to do the sponsorship in. You got to figure out whether you need to have tried the product first before you do the sponsorship in earnest. You have to figure out how to invoice the sponsor, and you got to make sure that they get all their materials to you in time. And all this stuff adds up to quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
And that sort of actually leads to, I mean, putting the work of the sponsorship administration aside, all the other work that actually goes into podcasting, those of us who have done it, it explains why we want to be sponsored and why we want to be paid for the work, because it's enough work that if we're not being paid for it, it kind of is hard to keep going as a as just like a act of public charity. Yeah. You know,
yeah, it's a hobby, then, but it often grows into either you sort of have, everybody I think comes to that point where, okay, I've put in this many hours into this thing, do I keep just doing it for fun and it's evenings and weekends fun thing I do, or can it be something more? And that's hopefully for those of you listening anyways, this episode has been kind of a good glimpse into that. One thing I wanted to throw out there for somebody who's thinking about sponsorship, and I've talked, I don't think there's no inside baseball or things that I'm talking about that aren't public knowledge, but sponsorship of a show in terms of listener downloads, in terms of getting actual real dollars, not just, you know, $5 or whatever from somebody to sponsor your show, you know, it's in the thousands of listeners. There's no hard and fast rule about that, but because there's exceptions where maybe you've got 100 people who are dedicated to finding out about whatever Warren Buffett's investment advice or something like that, and somebody would gladly pay thousands of dollars to get in front of those 500 people. But it's I guess the numbers and the stuff, and that's what Lex, I know, is when I talk with him, hopefully we'll be able to shed a bit of light on just, you know, what you need to strive for, or maybe where you've already passed and you could be having sponsorship opportunities mm-hmm. that you don't even realize are there because you're just doing this thing that you love, and maybe that's enough too. So before we end the show, there's a whole bunch of other stuff we wanted to talk to you about, but we'll save that for the next time you come on, when you're at episode 89 of Bit Splitting, maybe.
Bit Splitting, yeah, that sounds good.
But the way I usually end a show is just asking folks what podcasts they actually listen to and or apps that you listen to them with. And so I'll just, while you're, if you want to pull up your podcasting player of choice, I'm just going to do a little sponsor read myself, which is actually just a buddy of mine who, if you listen to the show, he does the intros and outros for me. His name's T-Bone. He runs voiceover and audio post-production service here in Saskatoon, but obviously you can service the world with the web, and you can hear his work over at thesoundlounge.ca. And so if you're a podcaster, you're looking for maybe a little different voice to help with some of that kind of stuff, voiceovers or maybe a sponsor read. Often I know a lot of sponsors prefer to have the host do the reads for you just because it builds in a bit of authenticity, but those kind of services or jingles and those kind of things you might need for your show, you can find T-Bone over at thesoundlounge.ca. So thanks to him for sponsoring this episode. So Daniel, did that give you enough time to
rough list?
I know you listen to a lot, I guess.
I listen to a lot, and I go in phases, but there's so it's probably best that I sort of focus on some of the stuff that is just perennially, the stuff that I just almost can't miss an episode. And the stuff that's like that for me is the previously mentioned Roderick on the Line with Merlin Mann. It's the weirdest show, I have to say, in the best way. And for a long time, I described my relationship with that show as being one where every time a new episode came on, I looked at it and thought, I don't really feel like listening to this. Because I wasn't really sure what to expect, but it was kind of the kind of thing where I had to just go on faith for a little while and be like, well, I don't know. It seemed like the last time I listened to this, I felt like it was a really good idea that I had listened to it afterwards. So then I'd play it and be like, all right, yeah, I don't know where this is going, but let's see. And then, you know, an hour later, I'm listening to these two guys just talk about every like manner of thing going on in their life or in their storied history. And I'm just like, you know, you get these kind of like big, like life insights, I think, which is maybe overplaying, you know, but I don't think so. It's a great show for just kind of like hearing two people talk about things in their life, in their lives, and what's meaningful to them. So I recommend that. I recommend that, and I have to recommend it with the caveat that you have to maybe give yourself a little bit of a make yourself listen to it for a while, get into the groove of it.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste almost.
Yes, exactly.
Which I was going to say, it's kind of a funny little promo line you could give to Merlin of the, I don't really want to listen to this by Daniel Johnson.
Exactly. Well, and then
I know what you mean.
And then I also listened to, I have listened very, very regularly over the years to Back to Work, Merlin's other show. But I go through phases with that. I kind of go in and out. Other stuff that, it's on my radar. I listen to some very corporate, I guess, stuff. Not corporate in the sense of, I guess, corporate, but professional stuff like Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Actually, one of the inspirations to me for the style of interview show that I'm doing with Bit Splitting. This American Life, another big one that I like a lot. I listen to some of the stuff coming out of Mule. You know, I mentioned already the talk show with John Gruber. I also really like the New Disruptors with Glenn Fleischman, another interview show where he's specifically trying to talk with folks who are kind of making a splash in the sort of modern internet-based economy. I followed my friends Marco Arment and John Siracusa over to their new Accidental Tech podcast, which is just running off of Marco's network of one, I think. And my friends Guy English and Renee Ritchie do a show, a developer interview show called Debug. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that. Great show. A bunch of other stuff. I probably shouldn't go too deep into stuff for fear of casting the net too widely and missing somebody. But I really like some of the stuff coming from some of the stuff on the 70 Decibels network, which is now acquired by 5x5. It's just we're so lucky right now to have so many great podcasts, and like the fact that there are networks is great. And then the fact, I think, that there are individuals like yourself, Chris, and like myself, and like Marco, just putting stuff out independent of a network is, I think, also vital to the kind of scene we want to have for podcasting. You know, I think it's like I have no shame that I'm listening to stuff from NPR or that I'm listening to stuff by, you know, one guy in his office. And that whole spectrum of podcast is valuable and should, you know, be appreciated. It is like radio, but it's radio at a time and an era when anybody can have a radio show. And that's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it tends to, I think what's really neat, at least what I've found, is it tends to help bridge, like almost silos of the internet, right? Because someone listening to this show is into podcasting maybe and has never even thought that there's a WordPress app that they could use, or an app for WordPress that they could use on their Mac, let's say, and comes across you because you talked about this, talked about it briefly on your show or my show, and then finds you, and they might not have even ever considered that or whatever. And there's even, like you said, with some of the shows you listed, such a variety of topics where we tend to typically sort of read blogs that are in my wheelhouse, my area of interest, and it takes a lot for me to step outside of that, I guess. Whereas shows like the New Disruptors, and where they interview people that you wouldn't have never ever come across otherwise, other than they happen to be interviewed on this show, and exposes you to their thing, their love, their products, right, whatever, their services, all that kind of stuff. Just a neat time.
I also like the fact that you can sort of pick and choose, and you can graze from the wide landscape of podcasts. Like, you know, I mentioned a bunch of shows that I listen to fairly regularly, but I also frequently find myself, you know, like the phenomenon of somebody appearing on a show and tweeting about it that'll often draw me over to some show that I've never heard before, and I'll listen to that one episode, and then maybe if I like it, it'll become a regular. But maybe I'll just say, you know what, that was a good show. I liked listening to that one show, and I can move on. I don't have to become a regular listener just to enjoy what they've done and appreciate the work that they've done for one or two shows.
Yeah, exactly. Do you use something like Huffduffer? Have you come across that?
I have used it here and there. Mostly I find that it's funny. I actually wrote something kind of like Huffduffer as a native Mac client years ago because I had this challenge of like disparate audio. I wanted to be treated like a podcast. These days, it seems like for the most part, the stuff I want to listen to is coming up in podcast format. So I can just, you know, go in with, I'm currently using Instacast on my iPhone. That was a big transition for me because I used to use iTunes and sync to an iPod. I still don't have all there's some rough edges there I haven't quite worked out, but, you know, I like the ability to be able to say, you know, just I'm going to go add just this show or just this, you know, maybe subscribe to this for a little while and then let it fall to the bottom of the list.
Yeah. Instacast is perennially, just about every episode, I think, is what's most common. There's another
Downcast
is podcast the sponsor of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Instacast for Mac beta is coming out. I remember that same transition of it took a lot for me to actually switch from iTunes on the Mac to using my phone. There's some sort of like, kind of like the same of, you know, similar to owning your own music versus just having it be in the cloud or whatever. And it was kind of that similar transition for me of like, no, I need to have it on my computer. Otherwise it's, I don't know.
Right.
There's some mental switch that finally, when I did switch to listening to it on my iPhone Instacast or whatever I'd used at the time, but now I am using Instacast as well. It was like, oh yeah, why haven't I been doing this all along? This is so much easier because I can take it wherever and don't have to always sync my phone and
right. The only thing that's annoying to me still is I still find it harder to add a new subscription. And maybe the Mac client for Instacast will make that something if it syncs the subscriptions, and maybe I'll be able to work that into my workflow. But currently I kind of find it annoying that I have to almost like, if I see a podcast on my computer, I have to kind of make a note to myself to add it to
phone. Yeah.
So
yeah. And that's where what I like about Huffduffer, not to go too much longer, we're a little over time, but Huffduffer is nice for just that bookmarklet of quickly grabbing an episode, and then I subscribe to my Huffduffer feed in Instacast, and then I remember to listen to that episode and we'll, you know, later
right.
on
okay.
or whatever.
That's a good point. Yeah, I should consider something like that. You know, one last thing, since we haven't quite gone far enough down this this podcasting rabbit hole, but something else from the point of view of producing podcasts is I haven't actually put together this solution yet, but I'm planning this solution. I think it's very valuable, is making a separate developer, you know, a separate private feed for your podcasts so that you can upload like beta releases, so to speak. This is more of an issue if you're doing something like me where I'm heavily editing the show.
Yeah.
But to be able to say, right now what I've been doing is like going through this process. We didn't get into this question of like what I use for my own editing, but I use Logic from Apple, and then I have this process of like exporting it, converting it, and then copying it over to my phone so I can listen to it on my phone and see what it's going to sound like. But I'm in the process of building a kind of system where I could easily automatically deploy this stuff up to a custom feed just for auditioning sort of my episodes in progress. Because that's something that is a challenge, and it's a piece of friction. But it kind of sounds similar to what you're saying when you're using this Huffduffer feed for. It's just a way to get the stuff into an app like Instacast. So that's the kind of approach I'm going to be taking from an editing point of view. And then to also be able to say, like, you know, I think Instacast has this feature. I think that either Instacast and or the podcasts app has a feature where you can add a memo to the app while you're listening. And then, because it would be ideal to be able to say, okay, you know, you hear like a flubbed up like edit, and you say, oh, make a note here to Right. Or let's just take a more like traditional example, like, oh, there's profanity at this point. And you don't have to like even look at the phone and say, oh, it's at 1 hour and 30 minutes in. Just say, mark this spot. Stuff like that, I think, is useful for the workflow to try to improve on that going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there's a whole realm of other discussions to go down, but I'm going to just resist the temptation.
Okay. And don't let me have the mic.
That is the other problem of interviewing podcasters is they know how to talk, which is the blessing and the curse. So in wrapping up now, finally, so folks, you can go to the bathroom because you can take your phone with you wherever you go if you're listening on. No.
Please have a little respect for us. And
yeah.
Abstain until the show is over.
I don't want pictures of people Robert Scobling the podcaster.
Yes.
Where can folks, if they haven't figured it out already, where can folks find you, follow you, all that kind of stuff online?
Well, my sort of like personality nexus is probably on Twitter at Daniel Punkass. And my company website is red-sweater.com. And my, aforementioned technical site is bitsplitting.org. And those are basically the three places you can find me. If you've sort of gotten fed up with Twitter and have moved over to app.net, I'm over there as well. Same name, Daniel Punkass. So I sort of have a foot in both of those social spheres right now.
Awesome. All right. And my thanks to you guys, whoever folks who are listening. And you can follow me on Twitter, iChris on Twitter. And then, of course, more importantly, SSKTN on Twitter, Facebook, app.net. And if you found this show somewhere in iTunes somewhere or some podcast listing somehow, you can find links in our show notes at sskTN.com. Look for the Show Me Your Mic logo, and episode 17 is will have Daniel's smiling face or Daniel's punk ass face in some fashion. So thanks for listening and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Show Me Your Mic on the SSKTN Podcast Network. Follow along on Twitter at SSKTN or like us on Facebook.com/SSKTN. Be sure to visit SSKTN.com for interviews with other podcasters, as well as learn about other shows we produce, such as Welcome to the Internet, Too Lazy to Blog, and Lost in Lemon.